Hey guys, welcome back to the Blood and Black Rum podcast. I'm Ryan from ColdSploitation.com, and I'm joined with my co-host, Martin.
How's it going?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well. It's our last episode of Kaijun. I don't know, is that a good news for you, or what do you think?
You know what's pretty miraculous about that? Pacific Rim and them were both an hour and 10 minutes long.
Wait, what?
I'm looking at it like, you know, our episode right now. Like,
so I was like, no way. Pacific Rim's like 2 hours and 10 minutes long. No, I gotcha.
It's a whole anime season.
Yeah. I think we're ending it on a pretty good note, though, right?
Yeah.
Last episode, pretty good. We're stretching, and as we have throughout the Kaijun series, we're stretching the idea of what Kaiju is. And including things that probably people wouldn't traditionally include as part of the kaiju genre or subgenre.
Wikipedia says it is, so.
Wikipedia includes literally any movie that has one giant beast in it. Could be a fucking giant tiger. It's a kaiju movie. Fucking Conan the Barbarian is a kaiju.
It has
one beast that Conan conquers, so. Yeah, you can't go by Wikipedia's list of kaiju films because it's pretty much every science fiction movie.
Well, to be fair, if it weren't for the American Pictures saving the day, this would have been another.
You're blaming the Japanese, huh? They originated the style, but it was up to the Americans to actually save the
perfect it.
Yeah, to what? Save it.
Yeah, well, it happens.
Would you agree with Wikipedia, Tremors is a kaiju movie?
No.
Not in the traditional sense, right?
No, I wouldn't. No, but I also wouldn't say them as a kaiju film, because it's not. That's our own American, nuclear...
Yeah.
Nuclear catastrophe film from the 50s,
Yeah. And that was, it's us.
It's very similar. Like, if you overlap them on, and put a Venn diagram, they got a lot of similarities, but... A lot of differences, too, mainly being our films are better.
Could call them, giant creature movies. And
we don't have, Gamera, Friend to the Children.
No, we don't.
Guardian of the Universe.
So that's a Japanese creation.
That film is going to stick. That one's going to be, probably the film of the year that's going to stick in my craw.
And we watched the newer ones. You've never seen the older Gamera films. Wonder how you'd... Except those. Or even the Mothra films where you'd have Mothra, people singing Mothra's praises because there's, guardians of Mothra and stuff.
I've been looking at the list of the films we've done so far this year, and you know what? It's been a pretty successful year so far.
Mm-hmm.
Not doing complete dog shit.
Well, I think we're keeping it that way again with this episode. We're going to have another episode of one that you enjoyed, I think. Talking about, again, this is, like I said, it's stretching the idea of what a kaiju is. Not really, even in the traditional sense or the American sense of what we have covered so far, with them, this is really stretching it. This movie did, the original did come out at a time during the nuclear 50s. However, questionable whether it even actually does fit in with that style of filmmaking. It just happened to come at the tail end of the 1950s nuclear 50s craze of giant things. And 30 years after that original film released, we got The Blob in 1988. So it was the 30th anniversary. They remade it. And it's kind of... You said this to me outside of the podcast, but there's a lot of similarities here between John Carpenter's The Thing and The Blob in terms of the actual practical effects of The Blob and The Thing, the idea that it's a stylized remake of an older film, very similar in a lot of regards, and I'm sure we'll talk about that as we get more into the movie, but interesting to point out how similar they tend to be, because this is, while it does take a lot of inspiration from the original film, this isn't really like going directly off of what happened in the original Blob. There's a lot of differences, and it's a lot more contemporary, a lot more violent than the original Blob. Just kind of amps things up quite a bit. And you said you've seen the original Blob, right?
Like once.
Yeah.
And that was like on like a random TMC showing.
It's been a long time since I've seen the original Blob.
Which also might be the same time I saw them for the first time, too. It was either TCM or AMC was doing...
sounds about right.
Like Nuclear 50s, like Block.
Sure.
I can't remember if Ben Mankiewicz was there or not.
And the Blob that I'm most familiar with, actually, is the one from Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
Yep, that too.
Yeah. That was, you know, just like the Chainsaw Man from Zombies Ate My Neighbors. It was a fucking annoying enemy in that game.
Man, that game, as great as it is a true test of patience and endurance.
I think I've only ever gotten to, like, the nighttime level where it's, like, purple. And I can't even remember, but it's like, nighttime, purple, and there's, like, a whole bunch of chainsaw guys in it. Because that game is really fucking hard. It even now, still, like, you'd think, like, as a kid, oh, yeah, it's probably pretty hard. But even now, it is a very hard game. And it has zero, like, I don't know.
It's not forgiving.
Exactly. That's where I'm at, yeah.
But, I mean, like, that's, you know, a lot of classical.
Mm-hmm.
Classic games like that, you know,
yeah.
That Castlevania, you know, Mega Man, they all get their kicks on, you know, kicking in balls.
Over and over again. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen. Oh, you know what? No, that's what it is. It's the werewolf level, the purple like werewolf vampire level, I think. But whatever. Anyway, back to the Blob. yeah. So you've never seen this remake before?
No.
I have, like, this is my third time. I have a fun little anecdote to share. My current house that I live in, we were moving into it back, I want to say it was like 3 years ago when the Blob came out on Blu-ray from Scream Factory, where they released a Blu-ray collector's edition. I got it, and it was the first movie that we watched in our house. We had no furniture. We had, like, nothing, literally nothing besides we had a blow-up mattress and a portable, like, Blu-ray player or something like that with, a small TV. It's like, a very small one that you would, like, find in your kitchen now or something, like, you know, like people put in their kitchens. And we watched The Blob on that. Fun little story about watching the movie in our new house, the one that I currently live in. I don't know.
Were your children conceived on that blow-up mattress after the bomb?
No, they weren't. Nope, that was even pre... No, actually, I'm sorry. That was... They would have been already conceived at that time. Yeah, so... all right, so let's take a break before we get too far into talking about the Blob. And let's talk about the beer we have on the show, or beers, I should say, because we're actually doing a twofer today. Why don't you take it away and let us know what you got for this episode.
So, it's officially summer, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's my popper noise. And it's time for some summer beers. And it's time for some summer variety packs. And while I was at the store today... I saw that the old venerable Samuel Adams Brewery had their new summer pack out. And they weren't chintzy this time, because the Boston Lager wasn't unnecessarily crammed in there. And they had two new beers. So even though, as we've said a billion times on this podcast, as much as we used to like Sam's, the quality of the product has gone down over the years as they've been chasing, trying to get a bigger market share, but I'm still a sucker for their new shit. Still go out of my way, try it, see, you know, if their stuff's gotten better. And it has, kind of like the past couple of things, you know, that I've had from them, I can say, you know, that's not bad, you know, So in this new summer pack, they have, as always, their tried and true summer ale. They also have the Porch Rocker Rattler, which used to be a favorite of mine. A little too sweet now, a little too syrupy. Still a really good shandy, but, you know, they have two new flavors in there, though. Two new beers to offer. We're going to start off first, though, with the Summer Adventure Lager, which is this beautiful, the can, like the new can, like their can designs, like they go simple, but like this one's like a nice,
it's got an ombre to it. So, you know, the, they fade in from like a grapefruity pink into a, like a darker shade of pinkish orange salmon-y. It's nice. I like, yeah, I agree. I think it has the quality of a summer beer in can form. Again, like you said, they're going simple. They really don't put too much adventurousness on their cans anymore in their design. It's, you know, the normal Sam Adams logo shield and like a very large print. And then maybe they change it up with the, like the design of the.
It's kind of, I would say, vapor wavy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
sure.
Gives you that nice, like, beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. I agree. I like the simplicity of it, especially when you go grabbing one of these cans like that, it pops out to you. You see the specific colors are really like reminiscent of what you're looking for. So, you know, all right, this pinkish ombre is the Summer Adventure Lager. You know, the yellow one stands out because you know that's a summer ale. I like it. I like the kind of the classy design of it. So Summer Adventure is a pineapple and lime lager. And so what I like about this one, and I'll say, I thought it is actually a very good beer. I was pleasantly surprised by this. What I like about this one is that it is sort of like the summer ale, because the summer ale is all about lemon. But instead, they've swapped out the lemon for a pineapple and lime flavor. That almost gives you like a tart sourness to it, even though it's a lager. So it's a lager style. Tartness of a sour at times. Nice little pucker from that lime at the end, which kind of almost gives you like a margarita-iness to it. I like it a lot. I think it's a really solid beer. Drinks really easily.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I enjoy it quite a bit. I would like to see this like a six-pack.
Mm-hmm.
The pineapple's very subtle.
Yeah.
Not, you know, overwhelming. Lime pairs with it really well. Gives it like a nice zest to it at the end. It's almost like kind of, I wouldn't say a sour, more margarita-y, because it's got like a nice saltiness to it too. Really smooth. Though a lager, it does like it, as we were talking about before the podcast, does almost have a little bit of a weedy quality like the summer ale.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's technically not, you know, a wheat lager or a wheat ale, does have like a nice breadiness to it, nice weediness. It's really good. This is something like, as these days are, and they have been, hot, muggy balls, this would be something nice and refreshing to cool off with. So I'm pretty impressed with it. It's not like anything that's going to knock your socks off. Like, you're not going to believe it. My life's been changed by this beer. Well, it is really good. It does what you would want from this.
Sure.
And I'm glad that, you know, they tried something new. They didn't just shove as much as I like the Boston Lager into their summer pack. And did something new. So,
yeah. Good on. Also, to know, it's like almost a session at 4.5% too. So it's getting a 12-pack of this summer seasonal pack, you're going to be crushing through them. And like you said, would like to see a 6-pack. Don't know if they did one. I haven't seen it, but
no, they only do the summer ale and the Porch Rocker.
Yeah. I like this one. Honestly, I feel like they could get away with doing this one too and have like three seasonals out.
And it's a shame too, because you get four different beers in that pack, so you only get the three of these.
Right.
Oh
yeah.
So.
Yep. So the second one that we have is also from that pack. the Take a Day IPA. Take a day meaning take off from your work. Tell them, hey, fuck off, guys. I've got a 12-pack of Sam Adams, and I'm going to be rocking with it on the kayak, okay?
You got a kayak?
Yeah.
You bougie bastard.
Got two.
Two?
Two kayaks.
Rolling in the money.
So, with this one, gotta say, it's pretty bog standard IPA to me. Has some qualities of a hazy. I guess the selling point of this beer is on the can. It says ale brewed with orange peel, but I will say the orange to me is very, very underpowered. Don't get a whole lot of orange. Mostly what I get is like, vague citrus, right? Just IPA citrusness.
I'm gonna disagree with you. It's incredibly orangey. To the point where I think it's a little overwhelming because it's like the only profile here when you drink it. So it's not just a slight hazy. It's like just, bam, here's an orange rind.
I don't know about that. I don't agree. I do get the orange. To me, I don't think it's overpowering it at all. I think that I do get a nice oranginess. I've definitely had other orange IPAs where it is a fucking orange juice bomb. And this is definitely not one of those.
Well, because this is an orange juice. It's orange. There's a difference. One's juice and...
No, agreed. I'm not... Like, but other beers that pronounce themselves as being an orange, brewed with orange, they can sometimes become an orange juice bomb. And I don't feel like this one is. I do see the oranginess to it. I don't know. I don't think it's as pronounced as... I actually would prefer. I wish that the orange came out a little bit more.
I think it's really orangey. Like you said, I think it kind of takes away from the beer, though, because it just, that's what smacks you first on sip. And all you really notice, there's no other tropical notes that you would expect in a NIPA. But also, too, it's not really a NIPA because it's, are a little bit juicy, but at the same time, the hop balance, too. It's very, like, kind of West Coast. But also, too, the mouthfeel is very sessionable and really, like, kind of watery. So it's, like, a kind of a bastardization of, like, three different styles going on here.
Mm-hmm.
With, like, a session, a NIPA, and a West Coast. It's not bad by any means, as you said, but bog standard, like, yeah, like, it's... If you were somebody who was a layman, you were like, here's an IPA. This would basically be like their piney citrus nightmare where they just went, oh, what is this? Pine fall?
But
it's okay. I'm glad, glad they tried something different, but I don't think this one works as well. It's too confusing. Too many ideas going on instead of trying to focus on making it one thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably just thought, hey, we got to get an IPA into this pack. What do you got?
It's kind of amazing, too. Like I said, the mouthfeel for being so watery, like feeling session-y, that it's 6%. Don't feel it.
Yeah, like, I think, they kind of succumb to, we have to have an IPA in here. IPA sell packs. You know what I mean? Like, we just had to have one. So they kind of just pulled out a recipe and it's fine. It kind of rounds things out. But to be honest with you, I would say I almost want them to leave out Porch Rocker from their seasonal pack for the summer. As much as, people enjoy it, it already gets its own pack.
And yeah.
It's been such a staple. I wish they would have, if they were going to do four, I wish they would have included something else instead of the Porch Rocker. Summer ale is kind of a given. It's the one staple that, people who are stubborn and are like, I don't really like to try new things. If they see the summer there, they're like, well, I guess I'll get it because they do like that summer. But I do think that probably three new different styles would have done well for this pack.
I agree. Like, I mean, again, the whole point kind of the variety packs, I'm kind of lost because it used to be like for experimentation. Like, it used to be six beers, five of them would be different and new and exciting with one of the core seasonals or core in there to hook you in. Like, hey, we know you liked that, but why don't you try these? When they cram in a bunch of familiar beers in there, then, like, yeah, it's like, because Saranac did this the same year, too, with the Summer again. Blueberry Blonde, okay. That's there again. But so is the Honey Pills. And then it's like, you've already done the Honey Pills. In fact, not only put it in a Summer Pack, you put it in a Fall Pack. Mix it up, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, at least the Porch Rocker was better than having, like, the Boston Lager in there, or the Wicked Hazy, you know?
True. Yeah, it's very true. I mean, I like this side of Sam, though, experimenting. I like to see it more. There are definitely certain things that I always come back to for Sam's. Their winter packs being one of them. But I have been kind of shying away like you from them because they have been doing such little experimentation recently. But this is cool to see, you know, doing some new stuff. All right, so let's get into the Blob. Like I said, the Blob, 1988. We are getting a full-on remake of the original 30 years after the fact. This one's directed by Chuck Russell. Chuck Russell previously had directed the now cult and probably one of the favorites of the series, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. And to be honest with you, it is also one of my favorites of the Nightmare on Elm Street series. It's a very fun movie. It really did a lot to navigate the, like, getting away from the kind of what the first two movies did and trying not to repeat the things that happened within those movies. It's one of my favorites.
Ryan's also a huge Dokken fan as well.
That's right. That's right.
Which, fun fact, I didn't realize until, like, a couple of years ago, like, a bunch of metal songs I used to know were from Dokken.
Sure.
Because it's like, this is, like, a buddy at work can talk about Dokken, because he's in the metal, and you're like, who the fuck's Dokken? And he rattle off the songs and play them. Like, I know that. I'm like, how do I know, like, half the discography, not know what the hell the name of the band is? Mm-hmm. Like, were they just playing on Picks or The Edge, like, playing Black Sabbath, Rush, and the Dokken song, and like, all right, that was Rush, and then Pink Floyd, and coming up next, and it's like you skipped over the other song where you didn't say who was playing it. Like, you know, we can't mention Dan Dokken's name at all.
Another thing to point out too about this movie, co-written. Chuck Russell wrote, you know, his partial credit for writer, but also co-written by Frank Darabont, who, as everyone knows, of course, one of his most famous works is The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones. of course. Also writer of esteemed movies like Shawshank Redemption, Green Mile, The Mist, and The Walking Dead TV series.
Whoa, The Mist.
What's wrong with The Mist?
We haven't done The Mist yet.
No, we have not done The Mist. Yeah, so, you know what you're getting into? You get into especially at the time, Frank Darabont was pretty prolific and working through a lot of things.
He got off Walking Dead pretty early then, if he was only around for the first two seasons.
There was a difference of direction, and so he stopped working on The Walking Dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and that's where the direction kind of went.
I approached her right out the door. I won't have you say that, because even though I only watched, I think, the first four seasons, season three is the best with the governor.
Well, yeah, it slowly went off the rails, we'll say that.
Carl. So is The Walking Dead even in the zeitgeist anymore? Has that been, like, just, like, buried and forgotten?
Well, it ended last last year. It is still very much in the zeitgeist, though. I mean, there's spin-offs galore coming out, so.
I know, but like, who's watching them, though?
People who feel locked in and can't, like me. People who feel locked in, they're like, I watched fucking 300 episodes of between The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead. I can't quit now. So, yeah, I think it's the people who feel like slaves to the grind on it. Anyway, back to the blob.
How the hell did Fear the Walking Dead get up to over 100 episodes? How did it make it into syndication?
By people not caring.
I remember you talking about when it came out, like, there's going to be no points to the show. It's totally pointless. This is, like, going to be ridiculous, redundant. 8 years later,
it's gotten to be absolute garbage. Like, to the point where it's head-scratching that people were like, all right, ship it. Just, like, this makes no sense. There's a nuclear apocalypse. It's ship it. It doesn't matter. No one cares. It's head-scratching how it really made it through editors and the like and stuff like that. But anyway, back to the blog. So this movie actually has quite a few big names, and big names that were, you know, actually like after the fact. But one of them, our main heroine in this movie, Shawnee Smith, she would eventually become, I shouldn't have used the word heroine, all right? pretty reminiscent of her character turn in the Saw series, but
it's a pretty good play.
Yeah, it was good, right? But mostly known for Saw, also was in, as we talked about off air as well, Becker. It was a large part of Becker for its 8 seasons or whatever.
That's just Becker, but
Becker.
She's also. And I didn't know this. She's also in a country rock band? Or was?
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Smith and Pyle.
Oh, good. And this movie, too, they bring up the country music at the beginning of the movie. You got Jeffrey DeMunn, you know, also part of The Walking Dead later on. He's the sheriff, and he's sitting in the local diner, and he's trying to ask good old Fran out behind the bar. It's like, you like country music, Fran? Shit kicking music, you like that?
Not shit kicking,
boot scooting.
yeah.
she's like, I don't really want to go with you. Poor guy.
No shit stomping.
Oh, shit stomping. Yeah. It's got Shawnee Smith. It's got the inferior Dylan, Kevin. Sorry about that in advance, Kevin.
That's not true, though. That mullet is beautiful.
That's great. It's great. It's, definitely has a nice head of hair in here.
Yeah, but I also, like I said, I feel bad for Shawnee Smith, too, because she looks like Mia Sora, fucking, like, she's like fresh off of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, like, chasing around Matthew Broderick.
True. We've got, I said Jeffrey DeMunn. We've got you want to bring up yours? The guy that you pointed out to me, I had no idea. I was just like, yeah.
Well, I mean, she's a sad person. Bo Billingsley is here as the mechanic. If you don't know who that is, that's the esteemed voice of Jet from the Cowboy Bebop English dub anime.
That's right. And then also you got the Tooth Fairy from Santa Claus. Must point that out. For the Santa Claus sequels, I should say. It's important, you know, 2 and 3 are the ones where the Tooth Fairy really factors. Art LaFleur plays the pharmacist and dad of Shawnee Smith, who is perturbed by the man who comes home and he finds this guy trying to date his daughter, and he's previously been experienced him in the pharmacy, and he's been told that he likes ribbed condoms. The start of the movie.
I just love to the kids, like the condoms are kept behind with the pharmacist. They're not available just to be purchased. Like, they're behind there.
I guess
because he's like, yeah, give me a pack of Trojans. And then as he's talking to the kid, like the Reverend, the Reverend's like, what are you doing? Like, having sex? That's wrong. And he's like, no, that's not for me. It's for my buddy. Then he holds him out. Do you want the regular or ribbed? And he's like, yeah, ribbed.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's kind of interesting. And also, yeah, you're right. I'm surprised they didn't refer to it as like, I'll take some of your prophylactics. Yeah. Fucking clinical. But it is really funny because it's like so like taboo.
You're getting condoms?
Like, no, I'm just gonna raw dog it. Would you feel better about that? You know, it's like the failure of sex ed from the 80s. Like, yeah, no problem, pharmacist. Why don't you make the kids feel bad about coming in to get condoms? They won't do it next time.
You know, movie is early product placement, too, because she's like, I'll take a Trojan. Why not, like, hey, how about a nice Durex?
Lambskin.
You know, got lambskin
back here.
No, Trojan, same thing, too, like at the hospital. You got Blue Cross? What?
I know, yeah, that is pretty telling of the time. It's like, we got two insurances. We got Blue Cross and we got Blue Shield. They're not even together at this point anymore.
Oh, wait, you got MVP, you got HMO, just pay your down payment and get the hell on in and out.
But it is pretty funny, though, yeah, like, when they bring that, the older man, the homeless man in, and he's got the blob on his hand at that point, and they bring him into the clinic, and they're like, does he have any insurance at all? Like, they want to throw him out. They're like, fuck MTALA, you know, the emergency medicine, agreement that a hospital has with patients. No, you don't have the Blue Cross, you're getting thrown out.
Which, by the way, like, is that supposed to be a commentary?
Oh, yeah, I have to imagine so, yeah.
Because, like you think of, like, all the different films throughout, span of history, and nobody's shaking you down as, like, please, my son has a gunshot wound, and they're not going to be like, whoa, 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 before we wheel him into the ER, into intensive care, you got your insurance card on you? No, we don't!
I know, right there, the blob is so much more based in reality than most other movies. Like, in other movies, you know,
they wheel you right in, like, you know.
No concerns. You get wheeled in, wheeled out. All right, have a good time. They don't show you. Six months later, a bank-breaking bill comes in the mail, and young Timmy has to be going into the restaurant biz wait staff because he has to help pay for his broken arm oil.
That's why they film these films in Canada now, because now it's just like they can just rack it up to, like, oh, you mean to tell me they have to run into a insurance company? Like, hey, socialized medicine up there, okay? They ran it out.
We've already got him in the system. We know what insurance he's got. I have to imagine that it is commentary. Yeah, I mean, it's actually pretty funny, for especially for 1988 at the time. In 1988, we hadn't even fucked things up too badly yet. You know, insurance was all right at that time. So. And it's pretty funny, though.
That was great. That was great, though. Like, I was waiting for that. After you pointed that scene, that was going to be happening. I watched it. She's just sitting there chewing gum and looking at the homeless man like, yeah, Blue Cross.
She knows he's not going to pay. So
that's why when he starts burning up alive and the kid's yelling, help, he's dying. The doctor's like, I'm with a paying customer. I mean, patient.
Yeah, right.
Patient.
this movie follows a meteor that comes crashing down to Earth.
All I could think of, too, when it comes crashing down and the homeless man looking at it. Yeah, just like,
creep show.
Couldn't have Stephen King there, but holy shit, meteor shit.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's very much like that. Very much, you know, like, there is kind of where it feels like the most related to
the thing.
The thing, and then all, but also like it's 50s brethren of, you know, like kind of hokey crashing down from space sort of thing. What you get. And later on, it's revealed that, like, it's probably not from, like, an alien life form at all, but something that we've created, which I think, again, is, like, another, you know, commentary on bad science, dangerous science, things like that. But, yeah, we get the, you know, it crashes down as a meteor. You've got Donovan Leach Jr.'s character, Paul Taylor. I think this is probably one of the more surprising elements of the Blob, is that you are pretty much introduced to Paul. I think he's going to be your main protagonist, your main guy. You know, he seems like the everyman. He seems like a high school kid, but he's nice. He's not like the jock or the, you know, the big bully. He's just a nice guy trying to date Meg, Shawnee Smith's character. There's a misunderstanding with her dad. You know, it's kind of all funny 80s romance going on, and then all of a sudden
he loves listening and singing. Girls just want to have fun.
That's right.
The next guy.
That's right.
And then he hits a homeless man out of nowhere.
And I do like too that they just rushed the homeless guy off to the hospital. No phone call to the police or anything. It's only later on when they're at the hospital that they actually think to call the sheriff. I'm like, oh yeah, there's a dying homeless guy here. It's the start of I Know What You Did Last Summer. But you think
he's not reporting it.
Yeah, but do you think Paul is going to be your main character? I think does a pretty good job of doing like the psycho thing.
Yep.
Where immediately he gets eaten by the blob and, you know, melted down into a skeletal pile of mush in front of Shawnee Smith, and you're like, well, who the fuck is our protagonist at this point, because we don't really have, you know, and of course a woman. Nah, she can't be the protagonist. She's got the Barbara syndrome. She can't be the protagonist of this movie. So we got to have some
guy. As every good cop from the 80s dealing with women in these situations would say. She's
hysterical. Absolutely.
Can't talk to her now. Hysterical.
So we have to have a man. And who's going to fill that position but Kevin Dillon is Brian Flagg, who...
Beer crushing, cigarette smoking... Holding on, like, he's smoking those cigarettes down to, like, the filter and then some. Like, every cigarette he's smoking isn't freshly lit, right? He's just sitting there.
Mullet wielding.
So beautiful.
Bike crashing.
Didn't you like that nice, like, church key can that he had of beer that he was drinking?
I know, I do wish I had some of those. Love it.
Nice pull tabs.
Rip it right off. That's because that's what you want to do sometimes. You had a bad day. Rip the fucking pull tab right off.
You know what they should do? They should like make those the oil cans of Foster's like that still. It's like, you're drinking shit beer, but you're not drinking it to get, you know, to have a good time. You're drinking it to forget the times.
Absolutely. So you get Brian Flagg. And he's not your normal protagonist, like, because the film kind of sets out, and it does it on purpose, but it sets out this idea that Flagg has been in trouble before. You know, he's obviously kind of like the roughhousing guy, and
greaser.
Yeah, he's your main greaser guy, and you know, obviously, kind of harkening back to the 50s as well. But then the film kind of goes into this, like, well, maybe he's misunderstood. Like, he's. Not everybody's bad because they want to be bad. They're bad because they're in certain situations that, you know, force them to be bad. And so it's kind of where the movie goes with Flagg. You know, obviously, like, Fran, the diner lady, she likes Flagg. She gives him a sandwich. Since the grill's closed, but I'll give you a nice sandwich. Lettuce and meat sandwich. So it kind of sets that in motion. And then you get this really nice scene where Flagg is like on the corner. Jeffrey DeMunn's sheriff comes crawling by in his police car, and he's like, "Hey, Flagg, you're not a minor anymore. Means you're not going to juvie anymore. You know what that means? You get in trouble this time. You go to the big leagues, man." And it's like, he's like, "I'm my eye on you." It's like, "You're a fucking asshole, sheriff. Like,
why not give him the benefit of the doubt? Like, all right, you made it out of the minors. Okay, you're going to be a good kid now, right? Right?
No. He sets that in motion that, you know, Flag is always going to be in trouble and he's always going to have his eye on him. And then people wonder, like, why do they do the bad? Why do they do bad stuff? Because people expect it of them. And that's, I didn't say it is funny.
I did like that a lot. Like, oh, you're not minor anymore? That means if you get caught, you're going to the majors.
Shut up. Like, you're a fucking asshole, Sheriff. No wonder Fran didn't want to go to the country music concert with you. She knows you're an asshole. So yeah, Flag's our main protagonist, which is kind of interesting. And, you know, it kind of picks up where Shawnee Smith's character, Meg, and Flag are kind of at each other's throats for a little while. They're like,
you don't understand. And I don't understand. You don't want to help people. You're just like everyone else in this town.
You know, it's got the small town thing going on. But over time, they get together and they help fight off the blob as it keeps growing and mutating throughout town. Which reminds me, did you ever play the blob game in gym? Remember that game?
Describe it. I mean, I don't. Obviously, we did because we went to the same school.
You'd be like running around. One person would start out as the blob. You'd have to like run to the corners and you'd be safe. And if you got caught while you're running to the other corner, you get sucked into the blob. And now you hold hands with the other person. And now you keep gradually growing as the blob. It was a pretty fun game, I remember. It was right up there with the Ghostbusters game. You played that one too, right? You remember that one?
Yeah. Yes, I remember that one. Personally.
Used to love that shit. Halloween comes around, we're pulling out the blob game. We're pulling out Ghostbusters. But anyway. So basically, that's the whole idea of the blob. It eats people. It continues to grow. And this movie kind of brings into the idea that it's kind of all a science experiment gone wrong. Because you got Dr. Meadows, who comes in and famously utters... they're like, what do you want to do about the townspeople? Like, the townspeople are kind of dangerous.
Expendable.
It's a great, it's obviously, again, it's like kind of one of those hammy sci-fi moments where they like do a nice close-up, nice music cuts out.
They're expendable. All you're missing is, are these fucking idiots?
I know. And you know what, too? Joe Seneca in this is a really good choice because he's such... kindly looking doctor at first. You know, he's got the nice, like, white hair, white beard. He's like, oh, this guy's gonna be nice. Oh, he's really looking out for everybody. He's, you know, here he is. He's trying to stop the blob, and then all of a sudden get that delivery.
Expendable.
It's great. What do you think about the effects of the blob here?
Like a lot. I think actually the practical effects in this film are really good. You know, the blob itself has a practical effects, really good. How it attacks and absorbs and, you know, just digests and disintegrates people is great. Having that one guy get grabbed and snap through, like, the doorway, you know, was really cool. A lot of the effects in this film were really good. The only ones that weren't, like, near the end where the blob was, like, eating everybody, you can tell it was, like, a green screen. Like, you know, as it's, like, crawling around, like, sucking up people and, like...
Yeah.
But it was really good. Like, a lot of the lighting, too, like, in the, like, when they're in the woods, is very Thing-esque with, like, the way the light kind of, like, shines through the trees. But, no, I think the film's really good. Does a really good job. And a lot of the deaths are incredibly violent and... disgusting and really good. I think they did a great job in this, and it's one of the hooks for the film, for me at least. I think, you know, the raising that brutality level up, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they do a really good job with those practical effects of making the blob look really nice and gooey, of looking like, you know, gelatinous, really capturing the idea of the blob from the original, but then, you know, kind of making it a lot more violent, a lot more gruesome. The deaths are just kind of heightened here, especially like the first one where you see Paul just like melting. You know, it's pretty, uh, pretty surprising.
With
beginning.
His face like sticking into, yeah, you know, like the blob itself in his eyes. Yeah, it's all really good. Like, and if there were ever a reason to take these films from the 50s, you would want to do what this film did or what the thing did. You know, you have to up the ante. You have to up the stakes to make them more, a lot more visceral. Because then otherwise it's like, oh, well, what are you really, you know, remaking the film for?
Right, right. Yeah, they wanted to make it more visceral. I agree with you. The one scene, especially like there's some composite scenes that don't look necessarily that great. Like the one where Shawnee Smith is climbing out of the sewer. And the blob is kind of like giant behind her, and you could tell it's kind of like a green screen effect where the, you know, the blob is obviously not that big. But other than that, I think it looks really good, and it does is really reminiscent to the thing. I mean, the effects are nicely practical, nicely gooey and goopy, and I think they do a really good job with you know, managing all of that and making sure that it looks nicely grotesque for this new era of movies. So how do you feel about the whole idea that like perhaps the blob is like man-made, the origin is something that's like been experimented on and they've been growing this thing?
I'm fine with it because it's a nice play and spin on the original takes. Obviously the original blob is based on the idea that blob is a interstellar, it's an alien phenomena. And it's, you know, man dealing with the unknown outside. But here, you know, 30 years later on, taking that idea and making it more practical, you know, making it be something that's man's creation that we created, and then kind of tying it to, you know, as the original blob is more at the beginning of the Cold War, where it's more, you know, just, you know, us versus them, gets commies take. Here it's taking that and spinning it on, like, you know, our own government, like, can you trust them? No, you can't trust them. So adding that spin to it, it's a nice dichotomy between from the original. So
yeah, I think that's nice. You know, the original obviously being really centered around communism, and this one being more centered around like the threat is from within. Like, we definitely can't trust everything that our government or the science says. And, you know, this obviously has been used quite a bit. It was used back then quite a bit, you know, to show, you know, obviously even as early as Night of the Living Dead, where we have the good guys coming and actually making things a whole lot worse, or, you know, murdering people in cold blood just because they need to do what they got to do. The same idea kind of goes with the blob here. I'm not sure that I necessarily believe the turn at the end of the movie where like they basically just talk down Meadows and his team turns against them and they're like, fuck it, we're throwing a fucking C4 down the sewer. I don't necessarily believe it, but, you know, it works for the movie. Honestly though, when I was thinking is like, they're throwing that, you know, that bomb down the sewer. Sewers have sewer gas. Like, the whole fucking, I'm surprised the whole town didn't just like blow up right there from the sewer, igniting the entire city and just blowing every manhole open. But I also like too how they don't just throw the C4 down first. They just empty all their clips into the sewer at the blob for no real reason. Like, it's been proven it doesn't really work. You know, it's just a blob. It's not like, doesn't have any like nerves or anything. Doesn't really care that you're shooting at it. It's just going to absorb it anyway. But they just turn around and just start hammering away at it with their guns. What do you think about the soundtrack in this one?
It's okay. It's nothing. Nothing really astounding. It's just really by the numbers, 80s orchestral horror fare.
Yep.
You know, wasn't overplayed. Was put in like into the right moments and sequences, but nothing really stood out outside of the end song. That's our end credits songs are Bottom of the Barrel, Sunset Boulevard, 80s hair metal.
Brave New Love by
Alien.
Is it it's a catchy song.
It's good. I liked it a lot. Like, you got mad that I compared it to Dock and Stream Warriors, but
it's great.
Which is weird because it has like nothing to do with like the film as a whole. But
yeah, they were just like, Alien, write us a song, and they used it.
Like, you know, it would have made more sense if maybe you know, if Brian was also in a metal band, that's why he's also a rebel. You know, with his leather jacket. You know, if he's running around like, I'm gonna play this song for you, Meg. It's called Brave New Love. Hit it.
I don't know. It's a catchy song, though. I stick around for the credits just for that song. Oh, yeah. What do you think about the ending where it shows, like, you know, you've got the one religious guy who's, you know, been convinced throughout the movie that, like, you know, God is
what a, and what a, I would say, what a unsubtle rip at televangelism that is.
Yeah, it's pretty on the nose. And it's definitely something that Frank Darabont, you know, throughout his career has been kind of harping on again and again. Like, The Mist also is very, very, very focused on, like, false religion of people who hide behind religion in terms of, like, you know, being the good Christian, but then when it comes down to it, they really aren't. It's something that he does as a theme quite a bit. In this one, you know, it's definitely hammered home. How do you feel about, like, that ending scene there with the Reverend who's, you know, he's gotten half of his face blown off, and he's now preaching the good word and saying that the end is coming soon. He just has to release the blob.
It's fine. Like, yeah, like, it's, the film is kind of jam-packed with a bunch of little commentaries. Nothing really too groundbreaking, but also nothing that's, you know, not good. So, I mean, it's nice seeing that, because, again, it's, like, not deep take on, like, you know, taking the piss out of, like, televangelism, but at the same time, you know, it's nothing offensive. You know, it's not anything like where it's like, you just shut, you know, that's really unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of, it comes out of nowhere just a tad. Like, it's something that's not really focused on throughout. And then all of a sudden it's just like, you know, the ending is that sting to kind of get you thinking, like, maybe there'll be another one. But
I think it's also like them also hedging their bets on making a sequel.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Because he's from the sequel to, well, not that character, but the guy that portrayed him. Gotta look it up real quick. Del Close, he was in a Blob sequel, so, you know. I think it's kind of like a mixture of both. Like, have them hedging their bets on having a sequel, but also to, you know, tying it to back to him, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind it. It just kind of comes out of nowhere, but it's fine to end the movie, I think. Anything else that I didn't capture that you wanted to talk about?
I think that's it.
You know what though? Let's talk about, how does this relate to kaiju films? How do you think this holds up in terms of, like, our leeway with what we consider a kaiju movie?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, after, you know, with them and this, it's very much a, what do you call it? If you did a Venn diagram, there's going to be a lot of overlapping themes and ideas and how things are. Is it what I consider, like, this and them kaiju, technically? No, but yeah, I mean, there are a lot of similarities due to, like, you know, the nuclear themes and
mm-hmm. and the overlap and yeah,
the monsters and
yeah, that's kind of how I feel too. Like we stretched it. We kind of wanted to cover a lot of different bases here, and I think the Blob does reach that giant monster to some extent. It definitely does things a lot differently than a kaiju movie, but it has some of the same ideas at play, and that's kind of why we included it in this series that we did. All right, so on a scale of 0 to 10, guys with hairnets plunging, clogged six. What would you?
Does that make you feel good to know that they're washing their dishes in that sink?
Yeah, it's like a nice clogged up sink. No one knows what's in there. Just like, hey, whatever. Just throw some soap in there. It'll be fine. I do like that guy too. He looks like, you know, he just comes over. He's like, I got it. It's like another greaser type guy just working in the kitchen. Pretty funny.
Listen, the stray cats are big back then, Buck.
I know.
Stray cats. I'll give it a 7.5 out of 10. It's a really entertaining film. I liked it a lot. I really did like it a lot. I think the effects, the gore, the violence, the kills are what make this film fun and special and unique, because they are really well done and they are really brutal. So that's a plus, because usually when we do these films from the 80s, a lot of the kills are very pedantic and boring and don't do anything. So I'm glad like that the violence in this is really good. The story and plot is pretty decent. Nothing, you know, groundbreaking. It's nice. I do think at 95 minutes, the film does, at certain points, feel a little too long, a little too stretched out. Definitely think they could have kind of compacted some of the dialogue and kind of shrank it down a little bit. But I think, like, overall, it's a well-made film. It's a lot of fun. I think Shawnee Smith was a lot of fun. I think Kevin Dillon was a lot of fun. You know, everyone's having a good time and having fun in this film. It's, if you were to compare it to The Thing, like, because it does have, like violent-wise and practical effects-wise and visuals, it does have a lot going on with The Thing. I think, though, this is kind of like the fun, like, if Carpenter were to make a fun version of The Thing, this is like what, like, if I would see him doing in the early 90s for The Blob. Like, you know, if he were to do it, this is kind of like what it would be. Like a fun, like, take on it. Like, so he's probably like, well, I can't fucking do a miserable take again. Here we go. So it's a lot of fun. I think Chuck Russell did a really good job making his own unique little film.
Yeah.
It does make me want to watch the original again, see, you know, how it kind of compares. But the one thing I will say as I was watching it, because the original Blob does take place in Pennsylvania, it would have been fun, and kind of like the overall style of this, it would have been fun to see a Romero-directed Blob.
Mm.
So I think this would have been something that he could add a lot of fun with and kind of have done maybe a little bit darker and a little bit more serious in tone. Kind of like his own, like if he was to make his own thing. But by that point, Romero was only making a film once every one a decade, so he was, you know, booked up until the 90s.
Sure.
Yeah, 7.5. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I'd probably give this an 8 out of 10. I like it a lot. I think it's really good. And especially, you know, it has a lot of similarities to The Thing. It's very, you know, it has the practical effects. It has the idea that, you know, there's something out there that you should be paranoid about. I like it a lot. It's a fun movie. It definitely has more of the hokey cheesiness on purpose added to it. And, you know, that kind of gives it that 50s flair, too. So I think it's a really good remake, too. It's something that you would want out of your remake. You don't want it to do exactly the same thing. You want it to be stylized for the time frame And I think it does just that. And, you know, it amps up the violence, but still retains a lot of the elements of the original. So I think it's, you know, it's one of those rare movies that comes along and does a really good remake, but also upholds the qualities that made the original very well liked as well. So I really like it. A lot of fun. It's always worth giving it a watch. So yeah, nice little giant monster movie.
All right, so that ends our Kaijune. We're coming to the end of June here. Let us know if you want us to keep this on schedule. I know Martin will be super happy if we have to do more kaiju movies, especially the more traditional ones. Any ideas what you want to do for next time? We'll probably take a week off. Probably come back in 2 weeks, do another episode. But any ideas what you want to cover for next time?
If we can see Asteroid City in theaters, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. If we do get that, if we can get around to seeing that, I think that would be a good idea. We can do that Wes Anderson movie. Are we still planning on doing Red Hot 80s Action Summer for August? Generally the time frame we do it in. Might as well. I think there were some other movies that we wanted to cover that we didn't get a chance to in the last two. So we'll have to think up a moniker for this third edition as well.
I'm just doing all Seagal.
All Seagal. Red Hot 80s Action Summer 3, all Seagal. It's a good idea. I definitely am not up on my Seagal movies, so.
Neither am I. I've seen a couple. I'll be honest with you, I don't even know if his films are. He had one film in the 80s, so wouldn't even.
Yeah, it doesn't really count.
Above the Law, which I have seen. I've seen Hard to Kill.
Yeah. To think up another fun moniker for it. But yeah, so those are some of the things you can expect to hear from us in the future. So you'll definitely want to subscribe to us to hear all that stuff. You can subscribe on pretty much any podcasting app that you can think of. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, our home base at anchor.fm, which is now Spotify. Subscribe to us on any of those. Leave us a nice review. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Search for us on there, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. You can donate to us at our Patreon page, patreon.com/Blood and Black Rum Podcast. You can send us money and we'll put it towards beer. And also, if you want to let us know what movies you think we should cover on here, or what we do well or don't do well, write to us at bloodandblackrumpodcast@gmail.com and let us know what you think. Appreciate you listening. All right, so that concludes Kaijune. Hope you enjoyed. Hope Martin's Debbie Downerisms didn't get you too bummed out about our coverage of kaiju movies. But it's always good to have the devil's advocate, so take it.
Sure. I secretly actually love these films. I just get paid to be the devil.
Yeah, you just get paid to say how much you don't like them, how much you were bored by watching. All right, so we hope you come back in 2 weeks, listen to our new episode. We hope it's going to be Asteroid City. Don't know. So we'll let you know when we know. Until then, we hope you take care and enjoy your July 4th, which should be coming up pretty soon if you're listening to this when this drops. Other than that, until then,
take care.